welcome back to another episode of the Nine Circles Audio Thing. I'm your host, Josh Stewart, and I'm extremely excited to be bringing you a recent conversation I had with guitarist Nick Didkowski and drummer Leo Didkowski of the black and grindcore specialist Vomit Fist. It's been 5 long years since we've heard from them, but now they've got the new album Omnicide out, so what better time to chat about that, the members' various other projects, and how that informs their sound, Frogvasions, and so much more. So stick around, it's a heck of a chat.
I got you on speakerphone here, right in the middle of the table. Leo and I just both got home. The cat's excited. He's running around because we just got home.
This is Josh.
And we're ready to roll. Yes, this is
good.
Josh.
Hey, Josh, what's up? This is Leo.
Hey, Leo. How's it going, man?
Doing all right.
Hey, man, listen, I appreciate you guys taking a few minutes out to talk about this killer new album y'all got.
Oh, thanks a lot for your interest and support. We're stoked to do it.
Oh, man, absolutely. You know, it's been a tough 5-year wait for Omnicide. A lot of long silence there. So, I had to tell you, I absolutely adore Forgive But Avenge. Just, I love the album, and I'm still unpacking Omnicide, and of course, but you know, I mean, I love it as well. So 5 years. So what made you guys decide, okay, now's the time to tell some more of the story and put some new music out?
Well, we've been a lot of these tunes are just as old as long as Wake has been. We were performing this at the same time as when Forgive, you know, some of this stuff at the same time as Forgive But Avenge came out. And I'd actually be embarrassed to look back at the date where Leo actually recorded his drums, because it was a couple of years ago. It was like 2 summers ago.
Yeah, this album was definitely in a long time in the making, but yeah. a lot of the lyrics are new. So we had the instrumentals for years and years, and we would perform it, and you know, when you sing metal, you don't necessarily need to say real words. So a few years when we were performing these songs that are, you know, not too new, we haven't had lyrics, but actually that gave us the opportunity to really be creative with the lyrics that we have, and I think that Omnicide certainly is a step forward lyrically.
And talking about the lyrics, you know, the Forgive But Avenge introduced the Frogmen story, of course. And you know, with this one, it's got the whole Frogvasion somewhat failing, but right alongside humanity, which, you know, I mean, heck, if you look at kind of what's going on in the world today and all the negativity, you know, and you see a bunch of people saying, this is the beginning of the end. So are you guys kind of following what the, you know, the current events are doing, or was this just the next chapter in the story of the Frogvasion?
Well, I think I can jump in on that. No, we're not. We are generally very positive, life-affirming people, and we're not reflecting any, you know, any sort of message of hopelessness. Well, yeah, you know, we strive to maintain creativity in all conditions. The evolution of the record, you know, the tunes developed sort of independently on their own and then sort of became this collection. And right around the time that we were putting the final touches on the record, I became really obsessed with this book by an author named Jason Babak Mohageg. And the title of the book is Omnicide. It has a subtitle as well, but it's like a book written by an alien intelligence, and I read and reread it these passages, and it is so undecipherable but seductive at the same time. It's like you just want to read the same passage over and over again and sort of just feel what it's about. And then Leo had this idea of having Paolo Gerardi draw the aftermath of the battle of the first album. And the aftermath of the battle was going to have both warring factions mutually destroy each other. And the only victors are these swarms of flies. So, you know, life comes out of it. No life, yeah. But swarms of life does come out of it. We're originally going to call the record Flies Choke the Grove. So, you know, there's so many flies that it's choking the environment with this sheer, you know, mass. But that didn't flow trippingly off the tongue. And so right at the same time, I was reading this Omnicide book, and it just put one together. It's like, that is the perfect title for this.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It is the perfect title. It's snappy and catchy.
There's a bit of a theme, like, just to build off of that, like, there's a little bit of a theme in the album, in some of the songs, like especially in the last one, Choir of the Submerged Church, well, second to last, and it's sort of like a circle of life kind of story or kind of theme, where like you know there's life in death in the album art and like sort of the, you know, spiral or circle that, you know, the universe sort of goes through, like atrophy and entropy at the same time. You don't really assign negativity or positivity to it. It's kind of this neutral but powerful way to look at the universe that is like sort of this neutral chaos. And I think that's sort of a little bit, at least with some of the lyric writing that I was trying to convey, and Malcolm was we were sort of mutually trying to aim towards this kind of explosive and implosive kind of, you know, opposites and circular, spiraling chaos.
Leo's putting words to one of my favorite propositions about nature, and that nature is neither cruel nor kind. Nature just is. Right. If it's to a wasp's advantage to evolve into something that lays its eggs in a spider, which you know, cruelly hatch larvae, eat the spider alive. Well, that's horrible. But it's just is, right. It's just it was an evolutionary opportunity, and it just expresses itself. And you can assign horror to it. And you can assign repugnance to it. You can assign beauty to the smell of a flower and to the sunset, but nature's not doing that. You know, we're doing that. So these frog invaders in Mortal Kombat with these human soldiers, they eliminate each other, and flies swarm out of it, you know, and they follow these spiral patterns up into the sky, which mimic kind of what Leo's talking about, you know, metaphoric spirals of existence. But there's no, you know, the earth doesn't care.
Yeah.
The flies just come out of it, and that's what it is. And, you know, there's a mass extinction, and more stuff will emerge.
Well, yeah, and, you know, you talk about on the one hand, there's, you know, the chaos, and then the other hand is less chaos. And I picked that up a lot more on this record, which, like I said, you know, I'm still unpacking it all. But one of the biggest things that stood out to me early on was that this one's got a stronger sense of exploration within the music. And when you have a space, you find time in that space to do, I guess, you know, pardon me for saying this, but to do kind of some of the other projects that you got, you know, the Dr. Nerve, the Chord, where you're exploring in notes and exploring, you know, through bars and all that. And there's a lot more of that. True, yeah. There's still tons of grind on it. But you do a lot more exploration this time out than, you know, say last time out. So you can hear that back and forth good on this one.
Yeah, well, I think Forgive But Avenge was, you know, I've been reflecting on it now. I had a nice conversation about both records with a friend of mine today over lunch, and it was actually remarkable how much the band was identified already in that first record. You know, almost like pretty much everything is there. There's no tracks that you kind of regret or that are kind of off the beaten path that, you know, are fat that you would want to trim. And so I feel like Omnicide is a really strong natural step forward. It doesn't kill off anything from the first record. It's just really forward looking.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. No, I totally agree with that. I mean, you've got everything that was so great about that album, but then, you know, like I say, this time out, you go a lot of places that I didn't hear from the first one. But, you know, the one thing that I like about Vomit Fist is it's not just, you know, it's not just typical grind and go away. I mean, you know, Forgive had all the immediacy, and this one it's got, you know, kind of time to open up in the music. And even on Forgive, I mean, to this day, I still find stuff in that that I said, man, I didn't hear that the last 20 times I listened to it. So I'm still finding stuff. So when it comes time for a new record, or, you know, and I know you've been building on Omnicide now for just about as long as the other one has been out. But, you know, how does that whole creation process go for you guys? Because, again, like I say, it's not typical just grind and get out. It's I mean, this is, you know, this is an easy thing what y'all are doing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can start it off and then pass it off to Leo. Typically, with maybe a couple of exceptions, tune will start with me coming up with some riffs and organizing them in a structure. And then and I'll call Lee in my room and I'll say, hey, man, check this out, you know, and he'll have some opinions about it. And we'll do some back and forth, sort of picture a drum part and maybe rearrange the sections based on what he has in mind. And we'll really have this sort of merit-based, sometimes argument about what's better, you know, which section should come first and which whatever. And then we'll come up with the form, and then, you know, he'll come up with his drum part, and then and typically either Malcolm will write words or Leo will write words, or my favorite process is when they'll just spin words out, like, in real time, in rehearsal. They'll just start riffing on some absurd fantasy, you know, and spin this fantasy for like 5 minutes, and then distill those 5 minutes and those hundreds of words, distill them down to like 100 words, and then distill those 100 words down to like 25 words, and take that 5 minutes and distill it down to like 20 seconds. So,
yeah, I'll add to that. I mean, I like what you said, how it's like not just grind, and it does sort of like that's very true. Like we've always tried to push the boundaries of grindcore, but not only that, by adding in other elements of metal that we love and enjoy, and you know, it's why we wear Corpse Paint on stage, and I do feel like Omnicide is like a step forward, but also a truer, almost realization of what we're kind of aiming for with our music, because we really wanted to try to be able to create art that blends black metal in with grindcore, and so there will be like a grindcore riff in a song, and like, you know, in some of the longer songs, you know, there'll be like a sort of heavy, fast, crazy riff, and then there's like more like melodic tremolo guitar parts that come right after it, and it's kind of, it's, you know, grindcore allows for these like fast like switches, so it kind of it also allows for, you know, kind of these cool quick switches to like a black metal riff and then there's, you know, we build at least without this album, we've been able to build longer songs that sort of employ that concept of blending genres together and bending the genres and making people sort of question what we really are. I mean, we advertise as like black and grindcore, and then people sort of want to find out what that is, because that's sort of, you know, something that we try to innovate.
Yeah, that's well put. I think Omnicide kind of draws a little more attention to the word blackened in that pairing of black and grind, and maybe Forgive put a little more emphasis on the grind half.
Yeah, definitely. I'm kind of black and grindcore, but I think now with Omnicide, you're kind of moving. That's your footer, but now you're kind of moving into kind of the harder to just tag category, and I love that as well. You know, something that you can't just listen to it. You know, you can't just listen to it and say, "Oh, that's death metal. Oh, that's grind. Oh, that's black metal." Whatever it is, you know, if you can't hardly categorize, that's the good stuff.
Well, that is really that makes me feel so good, man. Because that was like one of the greatest things I ever heard about Dr. Nerve was when people start to refer to Dr. Nerve as a genre. And I think it was in a catalog, it was like in Music Distribution Service or something like that, where I read a review or description of some other record by some other band, and they referred to it as a reference to Dr. Nerve, you know. So it's like you feel like you set up these axioms, you know, these without even intending to. You set up these sort of musical axioms, and you discover them, and you realize them, and then you sort of abstract them, and then other people distill it and think of it as like its own thing, you know. So hearing you say that it's kind of defying both genres and converging toward its own descriptor is just wonderfully heartening. I can't tell you how much that means to me.
After the first, what, two, three times I listened to Omnicide, that was one of the first things, you know, besides the fact that, the you know, you explored a lot more of the music, is that's what I thought. I said, well, you know, if somebody comes at this with and looking at just the black and grindcore tag and knows nothing else about it, they're going to miss a lot.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the strength and the weakness of labeling, right?
Yes.
You gotta pull someone in with something, right?
Yeah,
even if you just call it metal, you know.
Yeah, then, that's right. Yeah.
But you can't eliminate expectations that come along with a phrase like that. Like, yeah, it's hard. It's a very delicate dance. So I appreciate this topic. It's something I've given a lot of thought to, and there's almost, you know, there's no answer. It's just sort of an endlessly discussable, rich topic of the power and the pitfalls of categories.
Sure. Well, and on that same sort of topic, I mean, you know, with the other projects that you guys are or have been involved with, you know, Nick with the Dr. Nerve, the Chord, and heck, even, you know, all the guitar lessons that are out on YouTube, and Leo with Care Dot, Chaste, Liturgy, and all those. I mean, it would be hard not to pull in some of that into any band that you do, right? I mean, with that many projects, it almost has to bleed a little bit.
Of course. Yeah, do you want to say anything about
it? Yeah, certainly. I mean, like, I think the projects that I'm also in, especially like Chaodot or Liturgy, I think that those are also kind of genre-bending bands, or you know, progressive, and I think Liturgy sort of pushes a little bit of like Christian imagery, and that definitely inspired me with some of my lyric writing in this album. Again, yeah, like Choir of the Submerged Church, like I go pretty deep into like Christian Gnosticism and Gnostic philosophy, and the image of the Ouroboros, or in Christianity they have this demon or symbol called the Demiurge, which represents all of what is like physical and you know, like matter in the material world. And that's sort of what Gnosticism bases its philosophies on, you know, it's like, that's a kind of a simple answer in a way, is like they, and of course somebody might disagree with me, but it's that we know that we can't know that God exists. And so all we do know is the real physical world, and that's what we'll work with. And I kind of touch on stuff like that in across the album. So that's, you know, that kind of like philosophy and some like sort of Christianity, which kind of also nods to black metal in general, because they have a lot of Christian, obviously it's like mostly Christian themes in there as well. So I think that, you know, working with Liturgy has definitely inspired me to be stronger and more creative with my lyric writing.
From the point of view of the guy that writes the riffs, it's amazing. I'm so glad that we put the lyrics in our records, man, because like for some of the tunes, it wasn't until we had the record out and I was, you know, typesetting the lyrics that I knew what we were singing about, and it struck me as, oh my God, some of these words are precious. They're so powerful. They're really, really extraordinary words. I'm incredibly proud of providing the, you know, being part of a musical vehicle that's delivering these words, because they are in their own freaking category, man. They're unbelievable. And what I love about them, one of the things I love about them is that it can really get deep, you know, absolutely deep. But then they'll pull you back like a slap to the face of someone coming out of a trance or something with a phrase like culminates in the frog. You know, that's the last phrase on the whole record. It's such a signal that there's an ambiguity around the it shatters any concern of proselytizing or trying to convert or trying to convince someone of an argument or of a way of life or of a philosophy, because it's such a sort of knowledge shatterer, you know, that culminates in the fraud. It's such an obvious you know, slap in the face of seriousness or taking yourself too seriously, you know? And that flows throughout the themes of this record. Like, just as you get to the edge, you know, just as you get to this dark edge, a lyric like that will, like, pull you back in and say, like, dude, tighten up, you know? This is not a cult. And I find that so healthy, to be able to straddle both sides of that sort of philosophical barrier.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I totally agree with you. I've always loved the lyrics, and this album's no different at all. I mean, I love them. It's very, very strong narrative. And, you know, going back to Forgive for a minute, you know, again, strong, strong lyrics. And I always remember the story track, even though that was just, you know, talking and what they talked about in that, you know, about the the wheat, they kind of would keep those for feeding the population and all that stuff. And God, I mean, this stuff, you know, listen, I'm an avid horror fan, but this stuff sticks with you. You know, it yeah. really sticks with you.
that means a lot. Thanks so much. That track was so much fun to make because Malcolm, our vocalist, he just overflows with this awesome sort of, you know, slightly premeditated improv, and it's almost like just, you know, letting a psychotic animal off of its leash when we're just like go crazy in the booth, man.
Yeah.
Just do what you do and like, you know, you can, you know, be like, oh, do like an insane sermon or like tell a crazy story or do, you know, whatever. And, you know, he'll always turn out some really awesome stuff just from the weirdest parts of his mind. And
yeah.
It's so rewarding and incredible. So I'm really glad you brought that track up because
yeah.
you just reminded me of this sort of little secret interlude that we did. And
didn't he call my, weren't we in the studio? I think he called my phone. He was in the studio, but he called my phone and left that on the voicemail, on my voicemail. And then we recorded it from my voicemail into Pro Tools, like with
yeah.
the engineer.
Yeah.
So like with these $1,000 microphones around, like we really wanted the sound of his voice, your voicemail, and you know, these little tone generators. And that was the best way to do it. So like we're paying, you know, studio time while he's calling my voicemail to leave this improvised sermon. I'd say one more thing about his improv. It's really interesting to hear some of the improvised stuff kind of take root and then become constant over many performances. Like the very first time we did Single-Minded Annihilation, we did it at that pizza joint in New Paltz, right?
Yeah.
And he does that sort of rant in the middle. And, like, the only thing I heard him say at that gig was something about leaving our testes sterile. And I'm like, did he just say that? we're like, playing. It's like, did he just say that? Dressing on it, that'll change from time to time, but there'll be a core notion. So it'll always sound fresh, but there's a certain amount of predictability to some of it.
Yeah,
or not predictability, reproducibility.
Yeah. It works like a champ, that's for sure. But, I mean, you know, between, and this is something that I've been dying to know now since Forgive came out, you know, and even more so now. I mean, you've got this killer artwork that goes directly with the music and the lyrics, direct tie-in. You know, you've
yep.
got music to match the intensity of the story. So in the beginning, what came first? Was it the music, the storyline, or the art? Or what, you know, I guess what birthed the beast, so to speak?
Well, definitely not the art. But I would say we
performed. Our first performance was as a duo, just drums and guitar. So I would say that the music sort of came first.
That's true.
But the like as soon as we performed that song, I was like, we need to have Malcolm singing because that'll make it complete. So the first iteration, the first sort of concept of the band was as an instrumental duo, but almost immediately became, this complete trinity.
Yeah, Leo really engineered the band he initiated the band. It was his idea, and then the idea of bringing Malcolm on board. I think the very first tune that we did, that we composed would have been Frogmen, I think. Maybe wrong about that.
The first song that included lyrics as well,
yeah,
was Frogmen.
So we did that instrumentally, but then and then I remember Malcolm like sending us like
a video
of him, yeah, just trying some words out over the Frogmen riff, and it was those words, and it just like locked it down, man. It's like, you know, yeah, here we go. We're done. You know, like, this is the, you know, it's like Sabbath playing that tritone, you know, dong, dong, dong. It's like four guys in a room looking at each other and just, we just found something. Like, we're I don't know what the, this hasn't even got a name yet, but we're done, man. Let's just keep doing this, right? And that's how I felt about Frogmen. Like, that whole, sort of Cthulhu vibe and just sort of horror, fantasy, political...
The lore,
yeah. Yeah, the lore. Lore was there right away.
Yeah.
Lore was there right away. And then there was this kind of weird mappiness and the way words would interact with the... guitar riffs,
like odd time signatures, and
yeah, like Leo was really instrumental in like the da 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 da.
Oh yeah, eat the hand that feeds you.
Yeah, I had a very staccato 16th note imagination about what the lyrics would be, and Leo really addressed it from a really rhythmic point of view and ended up prevailing, and that again, it sort of punched out a template for, you know, an effective way of putting drums, guitar, and vocals together, where the vocals are really a rhythmic component, a third rhythmic component of the band, as opposed to, you know, the notion of a frontman singer, you know, being supported by a band. It's really three people playing three instruments relying on each other to craft a whole.
And so I mentioned about the artworks, and you mentioned earlier about having Paolo back for this one, and you know, it's almost like the fourth member, because it seems like he just gets it, man. Because those two covers, you can listen to both albums and look at the covers and go, it couldn't have been anything else other than that. So how'd y'all get hooked up, and how's it been both times now working with him?
That's such a good question, because I remember vividly not struggling, but exploring how to get art for that first record. And we tried checking out a bunch of different artists, metal artists, that had stuff in a catalog. Some of it was available. Some of it was claimed, you know, there's these sort of online catalogs, and some of it would be, it would get close, but there'd be like this 10% doubt or like this or 20% doubt of like, yeah, I really like this, but like, I shouldn't have to convince myself that this is good for us, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I think
with regard to the style, for sure, but, you know, we know and love this band, Artificial Brain.
Breakthrough moment.
Which was a major breakthrough moment, because their album art for Labyrinth Constellation was sort of reminiscent of like weird drawings that I do when I'm like, when I was a little kid, of like just kind of chaotic battle scenes. And I was like, this is our dude. And he not only inspired us to ask him, and thankfully he said yes, but then that sort of drove me to sort of create a little bit of like a guidance piece to send to him. So
not a little, like big guidance. Leo drew that first album cover in black and white, line drawing.
Oh, wow.
In a little bit of a crude fashion, but
at Paolo's request.
And then he did it like a huge justice, because I knew that he was going to just eat that a lot and turn into something awesome. I mean, if you look at all of his works on Facebook or whatever, where, like maybe his website, it's just like these amazing like maelstroms, and just like, you know, it just kind of screams Vomit Fist and screams just like the general vibe that we want to convey through our music. But yeah, you're absolutely right. He's almost like the fourth member. He totally does.
Yeah, that's such a good
get us. Like,
I never heard anyone say that. That's really a good point. It's something that I would not see from inside the band, but hearing it from you, Josh, really crystallizes it. It's critical, man. I took a photo this morning of the two posters and the two CDs on the album on our table, and I just posted it. And it almost took my breath away. Like, look at this work. Look at this artwork. This is insane. And it's custom, you know. It's for us. It's you know, it's commissioned. It's by him for us. And I want to say one more thing about Paolo. He is the most approachable, coolest guy in the world. Like, I would send emails to some other artists. Sometimes I'd hear back, sometimes I wouldn't. I heard back from Paolo within like 10 minutes of Facebook messaging him. And we have this Facebook message thread going for like half an hour. We're just talking about his life and the things that are important to him. And we get past the niceties right away, and we're like talking about stuff like almost immediately, you know. And I asked him, so, you know, what are your rates? And he gives me a quote, and I say, okay, that's cool. That's for existing artwork, but what if we wanted you to make an artwork specifically for us? And he says, no, that's how much. And I'm like, what? you can paint me a painting? You're kidding me, man. And so we rock. He's like, he's my hero. And this dude is just beyond.
And also, just for album art in general, it's pretty valuable to us that we have a good relationship with the artist. And so just, yeah, to add to that, that he's so nice and you know, listens and really honors us. It's you know, it's kind of like a really perfect combination for us.
Absolutely.
Oh, in addition, I will say, he's not the only artist that put art on our new album, Omnicide. We met this wonderful dude, Masato Okano, who you know, is this awesome painter who has even painted the inside of venues that we live near in New York and love to go to. And he's an awesome dude. And he really honored us as well with his art, and we have it on our shirts and stuff. And oh, not to mention, and also Cuba, our other guy. We have a couple of artists who do really great art for us. I cannot understate the thankfulness that I have for these amazing, inspired artists that work with us.
It's really
quite a lucky and awesome thing.
Yeah,
truly.
One quick thing about Masada and Cuba. So Masato Okano, he does this really awesome sort of metal punk, hardcore monster art, and he painted the cover for the upcoming Dr. Nerve record, which is not out yet, but he did an incredible job. So I love working with him, and he drew sort of insert art for Omnicide. And then Cuba's one of the most intense guys you will ever meet. And the first time he came to see us, he would like run in and out of the men's room like 5 minutes at a time, you know, between people needing to get into it. And
oh my God,
he was drawing Vomit logos on the bathroom of his freshly painted restroom at the Acheron. It was like, for him, it was like, oh my God, fresh canvas.
Yeah.
My favorite band is playing. It's the first time I played it. And like, let me check. No shit, I got a marker. I'm just in the. He's like running into the restroom. And every so often he'd come out and say, I got done. And I'd go in. It's like, oh man, it's going to be pretty obvious, you know? You're writing our name on the wall, like, I wonder who did this to our bathroom.
Yeah.
But anyway, you're not going to find a more dedicated dude than Cuba Thomas. So he did you did that Vomiting Skull logo for us, and that is our best, that's on our best selling t-shirt. We're like in our third printing now. Everyone wants that. Everyone wants that t-shirt. My wife tells them to colleagues of her that work on movies and TV shows. She wears them on like casual Fridays, and then people see her wear that shirt and they say, "Oh, I want one of those." Even though they've never heard Vomiting Skull before. It's awesome.
that's cool. That's really cool. So you mentioned artificial brain earlier, and you got two guest base slots. One from Samuel Smith, artificial brain, and the Bengal deputy John Ehlers. So how did that come about?
Well, here's my memory of it. But first of all, I love working with Sam. I worked with him in a project called Petromythontiforms, and he's the bassist in my other metal band, Hessische Luftmasken. He's super open-minded, amazing, creative musician and bassist. So just working with him is a total pleasure. And sort of prophetically, Single-Minded Annihilation has a slow part in the middle that during rehearsals we refer to as the worm section, because it reminds us of Worm Harvester in an Artificial Brain tune. They have, there's like a slow section in there too. So, but we still hadn't put like one and one together, you know. We're just like, we're playing the tune and we're doing the worm part and like all this stuff.
For the album, you know, maybe we should put another song. What would she put? Like maybe a bassist would be good for this song. I wonder, but you know, Sam and John, we've known them for a very long time, and Bombardist, we played a show with Bengal Adepti at St. Vitus years and years ago, and you know, we've just, you know, that relationship bloomed into, you know, this happening, which John kills it on the song that he plays, and sort of Sam, I mean, my relationship to him has always been just going to Artificial Brain shows and us sort of, you know, talking with them after they played, and you know, since they live not too far away from New York, like, and then eventually in New York, it sort of makes sense, you know. We're always, especially my pops, like, he goes to, like, almost every freaking metal show, like, in Brooklyn that there is nowadays, and so it's almost inevitable to make a couple of friends, and so we're very thankful to both John and Sam for their participation in this, because they bring those tracks to an ungodly level.
when both those guys like sent us scratch versions, like, you know, here's draft zero, how do you like the direction that it's going, we flipped out, you know. We played it over the PA at rehearsal. It's like, oh my god, this is so good. Hey, because we didn't tell them what to play, you know. They're super creative.
They're just insane people. Musicians.
Yeah, and just like, you know, Leo comes up with his parts, I come up with my parts, and we're not going to tell these guys what to play. And so what the level that they brought the tunes up to was, it's just amazing. And one last thought about that, or one additional thought about that, is it integrate so well. At first I thought, well, maybe these should be bonus tracks, because if we have like two tunes with bass in the middle of everything, you're going to miss the bass after it's gone, you know. And we sequenced it and we didn't have that feeling at all. So those bass tracks are just, you know, in there in the sort of virtual set of the record, and they add what they do, and I don't feel like a void in their absence when the next tune kicks in. So there's something both about the appropriateness of the bass being in those tunes and the way they approached it that makes it, I think, a really natural fit.
You never feel that there's a hole anywhere in it. You know, yeah, you do hear the bass and you know it's there, but when it's not, you there's no hole. There's no, oh man, I'm missing it. But you don't. You just don't miss it. There's just so much going on that you just don't miss it.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, you don't want to have a band that sounds like there's an instrument missing. No, that was like a risk. You know, we're taking a risk. You throw a bass, you add a bass to your to your tunes and not the others. It's like really opening yourself up to someone going like, wow, I wish you had a bass on everything, you know, and like, why don't you add horns and the keyboard and some strings and, you know. It's like, no.
Okay, so from your guys' point of view, the artist's point of view, and I know this is going to be like trying to pick a favorite kid, but what would you say is your biggest triumph of with Omnicide, say, over Forgive, if there is one?
What do you say?
The biggest would be your biggest triumph with Omnicide over Forgive. Like, is there anything that you get a little bit more excited about with one than you did the last one?
I'm going to speak in praise of my son's drumming. I think there's a musicality to some of the drum parts that are just at a whole other level. And if I would just point out one track, it would be Overgrowth. It's like an etude for drumming. You know, the guitar part just cycles. The only thing that changes about the guitar is that it gets louder. You know, I bring up my volume like every two repeats. It's a short tune, six repeats of this pattern. And the only thing driving that song forward, there's not even any lyrics. So the only thing driving that track forward is the constantly changing, evolving drum parts. And it almost makes me cry. It's beautiful. The drumming on that is so creative. It's so well thought through, and it's spontaneous. You know, he plays it differently every time. And I feel like you captured some sort of magical take with that track, you know. And then the way it vanishes, it just sort of evaporates. This beautiful thing just sort of evaporates, and you know, with that descending kind of arpeggio. There's something just especially poetic and beautiful about that, and being able to express so much power and an almost romantic poignancy through the vocabulary of metal drumming, I think, is tremendously insightful, and I really treasure that about Omnicide.
Yeah. So Punos Music, and I may have butchered that first word, but Punos Music.
No, Punos is right. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that's your label, and that's where everybody can find the Vomit Fist, many of your other projects, you know, as well as Bandcamp. So it's got to be freeing, right? To just say, we're going to put this out on label, and it's my label. That's got to be some sort of freedom there. To just do whatever you want to do.
Wonderful. Just a quick sidetrack to who knows the origin of that word is when I first moved to New York in 1980, I did volunteer work at the Experimental Intermedia Foundation, Phil Niblock's place. And every time I walked into that place, it's experimental with a capital E, you know, it's like the weirdest, most extreme music night after night. And that was an incredible learning experience. And every night I went in there, I would notice this poster in the corner of the room that said Punos on it. And my brain would go through this little dance. It's like, oh, right, the poster's upside down. It's a sound. And it was like some sound festival. And so a friend of mine who I would go see a lot of shows with, he and I remember articulating, like, if I ever put a label together, or if I ever put a art, music, thing together, I'm going to call it Punos in honor of that upside down poster at Phil Niblock's place. So years later, I decided to keep that promise to myself. So that's the origin of the word Punos. It's sort of not pronounceable or mispronounceable because it's not really a word, it's just the word count.
that's a good story. So now that the album is out, what does the next 6, 8, 10 months look like for you guys? You touring a lot, or you gonna kick back and take it easy for a bit, or what does it look like?
Well, we got a couple shows coming up. We're playing in Philly in a couple weeks, and we're doing a release show at St. Vitus with Bangladeshi that we're really stoked about, and an awesome band called Thaetis and Netherlands. So we're really excited about that, and we'll be developing these sort of shorter hit and run, you know, 2-3 day kinds of excursions. No major, you know, month long tours. But Leo's going to be really busy touring with his bands, Liturgy, and
I will be. But you know what, we're kind of kicking around ideas to go, like, how cool would it be if, like, we went overseas? Because we sent the record to a couple of overseas companies.
Well, we have a partner, JVT Land. You'll see that logo on the back of Omnicide. It's this great guy, Jonas Voinsen, who lives both in Copenhagen and in Japan. So he's got our stuff. He's bringing our stuff into shops in Japan and in Europe and
we have like weird Australian fans who will like post reviews of the album, and we'll just be like, oh, how did they know about it? And so we have a little bit of a global presence, and I think that would be really kind of interesting. It would be interesting to go on tour. No, it would be awesome to go on tour to someplace overseas, maybe Japan or in Europe, because I think that, you know, I think they would receive us pretty well. And that's sort of like a goal. I personally haven't been on tour in Europe ever in my life. And of course, my dad has. But, you know, I think that's sort of like a great goal for this band to have, because I feel like it'll, you know, all the years that we've been together, we've toured in the U.S. I think it would be awesome to sort of bring it to the rest of the world.
It'd be a very efficient band, too. One of the great joys of this band is how efficiently we travel. It's three people, you know. You can fit into a rental car. Everything is so quick and easy. It's like the opposite of some of my other bands, you know. I mean, Dr. Nerve, I love. We've been together for 30 years now, 35 years now. But getting 8 people over to Europe, man, that's a job.
Oh, my God. Eight people and that much gear. Woo! Man, that would be tough.
Numerous times, but I intend to continue doing this. It's a precious thing in my life. But if I could do it with 8, man, I can do it with 3. So I would love to get Nerve over to Europe. I mean, Vomitus over to Europe or Japan and tear it up with these guys. It'd be awesome.
Well, hopefully, when you guys flesh out those touring plans, you might have a stop or two a little bit down south.
Oh, yeah. What's the closest place to you?
The closest to me, let's see, I usually will either have to go to Atlanta or Charlotte, North Carolina, to see, you know, good metal shows. I mean, we have a couple that are really local to me. You know, Asheville sometimes we'll get some. But yeah, usually it's going to Atlanta or Charlotte.
Got it. How far is Atlanta from you?
They're both about 2 hours. I'm right in the middle of both.
Yeah, it didn't sound like was the closest thing. being close to Asheville and Atlanta, I don't usually think of those two towns as the same sense.
Yeah, it's great when somebody comes to Asheville, because that's a 45-minute. But Charlotte and Atlanta, you know, that's a 2-hour down and 2-hour back.
Yeah.
But you know, hey, that's a small price to pay when somebody comes around that you really want to see. I do it a lot, you know. Love to do it.
Well, we should do it. We should do an East Coast thing, even if it's just like four days. You can get pretty far south if you're willing to do, you know, a night in Baltimore and a night in wherever, and then like kind of work your way down. That you can cover a lot. a lot of ground.
Well, if it works out that way, you can bet I'll be there.
That'd be great, man.
Hey, you wanting us to come down is enough of an excuse for us to get down there, man. If you're like the only dude on our show, we'll be happy.
Oh man, no, I guarantee you I wouldn't be the only one there. Usually the Atlanta market and the Charlotte market, man, they tear it up with metal. Any kind of metal show comes through, man, they slam those places. Slam them.
Oh. Hell yeah, man. Well, we got to get on that.
All right, guys, listen, man. Hey, I've taken up enough of y'all's time. I cannot thank you enough for taking an hour out to talk about you and the album and everything with me. And I can't commend you enough on what a heck of a job you've done on both albums now. They're both amazing, and I love them both. And so just killer job on everything, man. Love it.
Thanks a lot, Josh. It really means a lot to us to be able to talk to you about it. I know we've been in touch on and off over the years over Twitter and stuff, but to actually like hear your voice and talk about it and get your impression on the music is a gift. So really appreciate it.
Yeah, man, it's an immense pleasure.
Well, same here. Same here. It's good to finally chat instead of over, you know, text, Twitter, and email. So it's good to finally talk to y'all.
Remind me, did Lindsay Turnbull turn you on to us, or like what's the connection there?
Yeah, she actually did. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, back in the day when I guess you'd say the metal Twitter side was really good, and it was just all about sharing music.
Yeah.
You know, that is that time frame, which I think, God, my memory is horrible, but I think it was not long after Forgive came out, or right at the same time, and she was blasting it, and I picked up on it and loved it and couldn't get enough. So, yeah, she did. She turned me on to it.
That's so cool. Do you know the story of how she got turned on to it?
No.
She was an intern at Wayside Music, which is the distribution arm of Cuneiform Records that Dr. Nerve and I have been working with, like, forever, right? So Forgive But Avenge came out, and Steve Feigenbaum at Wayside agreed to pick up a couple, you know, pick up some and have it in his catalog. So I sent him, I said, do you want me to send you I'll send you a poster. And so he's like, he didn't want the poster, but I sent it to him anyway. And he opened the poster, and Lindsay's working for him. He knows she's a total metalhead. And he just kind of calls out to the air, what's a poster by Vomit Fist? She had no idea who we were, but it was like throwing blood in front of a shark, you know. Just like, what? Let me have a look at that. And so Lindsay got a hold of the poster. And then, you know,
the rest is history.
The rest is history. That's right. That's exactly right. Because, I mean, let's face it, if you've never heard of a band, when you hear Vomit Fist, pretty good chance they're going to be metal. Pretty good.
Yeah. Well, we got to thank Leo again for that, man. He came up with that name during math class or something, right?
That's right.
Leo's the architect of this band. I can't emphasize that enough.
Told you that was a lot of fun, and I'd chat with those guys any day of the week. So if you had half as much fun listening to that as I had having the conversation, then we both had a good time. Don't forget to pick up your copy of Omnicide at vomitfist.bandcamp.com. Check out the band at vomitfist.com, and you can also pick up a copy at punosrecords.com. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at _9circles, Facebook at 9circles blog, and of course the trusty old email, 9circlesblog@gmail.com. Appreciate you guys taking a listen to this, and be sure to support Vomit Fest and be looking for them to hit that tour sometime soon. I know I am. Until next time.